Around the NFL podcast keeps their families wanting more.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, joined in a virtual room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
I wish I was leaving wanting more. It's like, hey, my wife says, why don't you go work a little more?
I'm leaving them wanting more, just to confirm. I can tell you that's true.
Is there more of an about face? And you can see it right with this podcast. Mark, you used to talk about your young son saying, is daddy ever coming home? Now it's, is daddy ever leaving home? The answer is no.
Right. We could see less of daddy and be thrilled with that, I think, would be the answer. So, yeah, it's a tough time.
I saw you celebrating the Dodgers World Series win with the kids outside. They're jumping on board with some fireworks. That's good. Let your kids pick a winner for once. Way to go.
That was a good evening. So
it's good. Like, if there's one thing to do, teach your children early about the fun associated with illegal fireworks celebrations right. During a drought in high wind conditions. Yeah, this is weird. It's weird. You know, life is weird. It's almost like if you took your home situation as youngish fathers of children, and then you combine your entire work life and then put it in a house that's the size of a postage stamp, it could lead to maybe madness right on the eve of Halloween here. So we're fighting through it, though. We did it.
The opposite.
We're almost
there. Function.
We're halfway through the regular season. Almost. And yes, this is the Week 8 preview program. You could check out, of course, the recap of Thursday Night Football, Falcons and Panthers, but this will give us a full rundown of everything to come on Sunday and Monday. And as everyone knows, we do it draft style and picking first. Yes,
that's
Greg Rosenthal.
Right. I'm excited about this one. I was going to take this game no matter what. It's Steelers-Ravens. I mean, this is the best rivalry in the league, unless you count the Seahawks-49ers, and we get that this week too. So it's a great week for rivalries, and it's a great week to kind of find out how different this Ravens team is. I love watching Lamar every week. You guys know that, so I'm happy to have this with the first pick. But I have to admit, they're not the same Ravens this year, and I think this is the game we kind of find out, like, how different are they? Because I don't think you can run on the Steelers. I know the Ravens will try to run, and they'll run fairly well, and Lamar will get his scrambles, but I think this is a game Lamar has got to throw the ball over the top, because that's how you beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. Their secondary has had some problems this year. Their cornerbacks not playing nearly as well, and their run defense is just so good, and the Ravens rushing offense hasn't been nearly the same, that it's got to be Lamar to the outside. It's got to be what we heard in the offseason in terms of speed, in terms of the outside throws to Marquise Brown. Miles Boykin, I think, has had a little juice. Devin Duvernay, there's been flashes. They just haven't thrown the ball that much. And I think this is the week, if you're going to beat the Steelers, it's going to take a big-time effort from Lamar as a thrower.
I'm with you, Greg, because I want to be more impressed with Baltimore's offense in general than I have. I mean, they've beaten Cleveland, a bad Houston team, Washington, Cincy, and Philly, and they got handled by the Chiefs. Now, I will look at that Eagles game and say the one thing that is not a disappointment on any level is Baltimore's defense. I mean, Pittsburgh and Baltimore are like second and third in DVOA on defense, and it looks like it. Baltimore adds Yannick Ngakoue to the mix. Thank you. We'll have that player too. Why not add him to the rotation here alongside Calais Campbell? I mean, Pittsburgh's offense has a lot of pick-your-poison scenario weapons to it. But Baltimore has thumped teams left and right on defense. So to me, this is a classic old school AFC North matchup. We know these teams, but I think this is the best Steelers team that we've had in a long time. I really do. I think that they are so ultra powerful. Mike Tomlin is operating like coach of the year right now. So, you know, this is classic stuff. And for me, I'm going to do something special right here.
Wait a second.
Whoa.
I'm going to do something special right here, and I didn't even tell our producers about it. I'm locking up the Steelers, and it's going to be in Baltimore.
Whoa.
I think they're going to take care of business. I'm telling you why. This Steelers team is a Super Bowl team in waiting.
All right. Well, that's very interesting. On the road, that's a gutsy lock. I like it, Mark. And the Steelers, geez, I'm trying to make sense of last week's game because I want to just put a blanket over it and say, listen, they went down to Nashville and beat an undefeated team, but they were very lucky for that not to be an infamous loss for the Steelers. They were up 20 points in the third quarter, and they needed bad Steven Gostkowski to show up to save the day and push that field goal wide right. Otherwise, they're playing for overtime most likely. And, you know, we've talked about Ben Roethlisberger on this podcast a lot. I think this is a big game for him too because I was against you, Greg, on your Big Breeze comparisons. And I still think that Roethlisberger, obviously a huge upgrade over what they had last year, but it's time for him to maybe step up his game. He should have been able to put away the Titans last week. I didn't like the way their offense played in the second half last week. So this is a tough assignment for him, though. And the Ngakoue acquisition by the Ravens is a big one because now you could bookend him with Matthew Judon, and now they're going to be able to potentially get to a guy like Roethlisberger without having to blitz, which is the Baltimore way to get to passers. And we know Big Ben goes down for a lot of sacks.
Right. I want to explain my Big Breeze thing. So I've been calling it, it's a stylistic thing. I'm saying Big Breeze like good Breeze, 2019, 18, 17 Breeze, or even earlier. But you watched that game last week, Dan. What were the drives that were successful? It was like 15 plays, 63 yards, 11 plays, 72 yards. Those sort of short passes where you're counting on your receivers to make plays after the catch, and they've got the right receivers for it. And so I think it's smart. They're just not the bombs away Steelers offense that they were, but they've been pretty effective. You're right, though. This is by far their toughest test, but I like a quick passing offense against this Ravens pass rush. Like, that's how you got to beat them. And Mark mentioned how, you know, the Ravens haven't played any good defense. The Steelers really haven't either, including last week. Titans aren't a great defense. So this is easily the Steelers offense's biggest test this year.
Let's pick this game. Obviously, we know where Mark is. What do you got, Greg?
I took the Steelers, too, on the old game picks. Check them out.
Not a lot of respect for the Ravens. You know, this one feels like maybe it is, even against the top defense. Maybe Lamar Jackson reminds people why he's a special player and gets Hollywood Brown involved with some deep strikes. I like the Ravens holding court at home and handing the Steelers their first loss. It's going to be fun. All right, the draft turns to Mark Sessler coming off. Oh, I mean, that lock. I'm still in a state of shock. I'm excited. Locking up the Ravens. Who would have seen it? Okay, here we go. Or the Steelers.
Well, I actually locked up the Steelers there, Dan. Let's not try to change the narrative here.
Go ahead. You're up.
All right. So I love this second pick because I don't see a big drop off from the first game. And Greg, you mentioned this rivalry weekend here in week 8. And look at this, San Francisco and the Seattle Seahawks. That's where I'm going. You know how I do this thing. I'm about 207 pages in to a pamphlet I'm writing about Kyle Shanahan, who I think is the best coach in the league in coaching around injuries.
Why not just make the pages bigger? Why a pamphlet? If it's going to be that long, make it a book.
At this point, that's a book. It's over 200. That's a novel.
Make it easier for everybody.
Like a pamphlet feels like, you know, like edgy and kind of political and disturbing. And that's what I feel about Kyle Shanahan. He is all those things.
Highly edgy.
And I love this, the way that he handles injuries. I mean, they have been battered. I mean, right up there with the Eagles. And yet you watch them last week. He's got a third string running back, Jeff Wilson, running for 100 plus yards. Jeff Wilson goes out and, hey, sorry, New England, we're going to bring undrafted Jamichael Hasty in. He's going to run for 6.3 yards per carry. This offense, and I mean, it's not a secret, their passing game it originates off the run game. I think that Kyle Shanahan, he's been doing this for years, his father did it, makes life as easy as possible on the quarterback. I just think that this offense, no matter who's in there, he maximizes guys. And I mean, what coach in the league does a better job of using his fullback than Kyle Shanahan and Kyle Juszczyk? I don't know if it's because they have the same name. There's some affinity there.
That's it.
But I love every little part of this Niners offense. And I, you know, they have a lot. Debo Samuel's out at this point. He's not healthy, but they find a way. And I think that they are literally the better team than Seattle. They just have not been healthy. I really do. I think that they're 4-3 and they're in last place in the best division in football. But this story is not yet over for San
Francisco. That is a bit of an about face because you have been leading the Seahawks or unstoppable train. And it sounds like now you're saying the Niners are a better team. That's pretty That's pretty big talk.
I just think we haven't seen the Niners at full power. I mean, the Niners have been very banged up. You put all their parts in place, and they've got a better defense than Seattle, and they can do a lot with their offense.
I think Mark's right. You know, the 49ers' best right now is better than the Seahawks' best. The 49ers are one of only two teams in the NFL that are top eight in DVOA on offense and defense. It's the Bucs and it's the 49ers. The fact they've done it with all these injuries, yes, it's a credit to Kyle Shanahan, but they're also like a really top-end team, whereas the Seahawks, every week they have to sweat out that defense. And they've matched up pretty well with the 49ers in the past, but it's like they're letting Russ cook, and that's great. And I know like the fans love it, but I if I was a Seahawks fan, I'd be like, man, I wish they let Russ cook when we had a defense, because this is the worst Pete Carroll defense we've ever seen. And I know they bring in Carlos Dunlap. He's not going to be available this week. That is a good risk reward scenario. But with Jamal Adams, you know, still up in the air and the secondary, it just doesn't make sense. They're the worst passing rush team in the league in terms of getting pressure. And if you can't pressure Garoppolo, even without Deebo Samuel, I'm with you, Mark. I think the 49ers will be able to move the ball. Will the 49ers be able to stop Seattle? Probably not. And that's why it should be such a fun game.
Yeah.
How do you like that, Dan?
Well, no, I mean, I've been saying this from the start. You may remember while everybody was singing praises and hosannas about the Seahawks, I was like, but they have the worst defense. And the only way that's going to continue, they're not just going to go 16-0 because everyone loves the way Russell Wilson is playing for their fantasy teams. No, you need to actually play balanced football. And what we saw on Sunday night, which I thought was interesting, was in that loss to the Cardinals, when Russell Wilson actually did finally get some pressure and his play dropped just a little bit with the interceptions and unable to move the ball at the end of the fourth quarter and overtime. You see what happens when Seattle doesn't have that safety net of let Russ cook, and they blew a 34-24 lead and then they lost in overtime. So yeah, Seattle has major issues that was covered up by a 5-0 start. And the Niners, yeah, I'm with you guys. I think when it comes down to it with Shanahan and the scheme is just so sound. I like that it doesn't really matter what their player situation is with the injuries. It's like, we know, for instance, against the Patriots, we are going to run the football. We are going to run the football. We're going to use play action. They did it on 81% of their snaps, which is the most by any team this season. And it's still going to work, even if Jeff Wilson is running the ball. So, yeah. Do I think they win in Seattle, though? I don't know. It's a big test because they are, despite everything I just said and you guys just said, you know, Nick Bosa is not coming back. You know, Deebo Samuel, we said, is out. This team is banged up, and that I think this is a coin flip game. I really do.
It is, and I mean, I think the concept of home field advantage this season is very different than usual. I mean, I don't like the idea of going into a hostile environment in a normal year, but it's like you're staring at a bunch of empty seats. So this is not the same situation for San Francisco. It's like, oh yeah, it's hard to take an airplane trip north. That's the biggest problem there.
Also, the
I've got
yes,
one
that is,
final
that
subplot is. For you on yes. this game. It's Fred Warner, my guy, who I think is a defensive player of the year candidate, coming in and taking the middle linebacker belt from Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner's had it 3 or 4 years. He's a future Hall of Famer. Warner shows up. He swipes it from Wagner.
All right. That's fair. And since we're loving the Niners this week, my favorite soundbite from week 8, let's play it back right now, courtesy of the great George Kittle.
Yeah, I mean, football's a violent sport, and if you don't kind of go to that dark place to be violent and be physical, you're not going to last very long. And Coach Shanahan always talks about, you know, find the dark place. The longer I've been here and the more Kyle talks about it, the more you see everybody kind of goes to that dark place. And like I said, it's a violent game, and it's fun to be a part of a team with a bunch of psychopaths because I fit in really well here.
How do you not like George Kittle, and how can you not root for the Niners? Let's get a W, San Francisco. We move on.
What are we doing here? AFC West matchup, and to do that, we welcome in a very special guest. What is going on here?
Who is that?
Did I get lost? What am I doing in here?
This is not Move the Sticks.
What is this?
It's Daniel Jeremiah's.
What
music.
Is this?
What just happened? I thought we were taking a promo.
I told you guys, Dan, Dan, we talked about this. I said I would agree to come on. You guys ask me this every week. I said I will agree to come on, but not with Greg. If Greg's going to be on, I'm not coming on. I'll come on with Mark. I'll come on with Wes. I'll come on with any other cast of characters you have.
Yeah.
But I get here, and there's Greg. Yeah, I mean, I feel
all right.
lied to.
So let's set the table here. If people are not aware, and we want to get to Chargers, Broncos, where, of course, Move the Sticks does the color analysis with Matt Money. every game for Chargers Radio. But there is an issue here between our podcast and the Move the Sticks podcast. There always has been, but things have really heated up on Twitter in recent days. Let's check out a tweet. This one was sent out by Greg. It's awkward that Move the Sticks will announce every game of Herbert's Hall of Fame career, knowing he ranked Ross Blacklock, Andrew Thomas, and 17 others ahead of Justin Herbert, the rookie sensation for the Chargers, to which Move the Sticks replies, "Oh boy, I'm the happiest guy in the world to be wrong about this one. Also, to celebrate how well he's playing, I bought you a little something, Greg." I mean, that's a little out of bounds. So it got personal, Greg. And but you know, in another way, you kind of took a shot at him personally as well.
I mean, how is that out of bounds?
This is what happened.
How is that out of bounds? I'll take it.
This is what happened. This is what happened, Dan. Okay,
yeah.
Let's go to the back east where you guys would be familiar with this analogy. I got Van Gundy'd. Okay, me and Dan are involved in a big fight, and then here comes Greg grabbing onto my leg and tries to Van Gundy me. You know, I'm like, I wasn't expecting that. I'm thinking this is going to be like a Charles Oakley type fight, and now I've got a little pest grabbing onto my.
Wait a second. Wait, now. Greg has way better hair than Jeff Van Gundy. In fairness,
yeah.
Please. That's true.
I'm like an inch taller than Van Gundy. DJ, I noticed with your response and with your little slippers thing, it's like no one tried to argue the point that I made in my tweet that you are going to be calling this guy an all-time legend. And you're like, nope, I would have taken Blacklock. I mean, that's me. I'm the NFL draft expert.
First of all,
Blacklock over Herbert.
First of all, Greg has become what all of us detest. He's a headline reader. So he reads the headline. He looks at the rankings. He doesn't read the reports. Let me go back and read you the report here. This is the Justin Herbert report, okay? Herbert has exceptional size, mobility, and arm strength. Quick feet in his setup. Bounces on his toes once he gets the top of his drop. His motion can be a little robotic at times, but the ball comes out with tight and high RPMs. Has a big arm, but his placement is a little inconsistent. His front side will fly open at times, impacting his accuracy. That can be corrected. He has shown the ability to touch up the ball underneath, make some impressive throws on the run. He's a good runner, builds speed. He's effective on his own reads. Biggest area he needs to improve is the lack of anticipation. He waits too long to cut it loose. According to everyone, Oregon, work ethic, character off the charts. And here it is, Greg. Overall, Herbert has some special physical tools, but needs to play with less caution and learn to embrace an attacking mentality. So that's exactly what Justin Herbert has done. That was the correction that needed to be made. And hats off to Justin. Hats off to the Chargers because he's taken what he was at Oregon and he's improved on it.
Let me jump.
You're just reading headlines.
Let me jump in and I'll play devil's advocate. I don't want to get in the middle of this.
Oh, this is going to be tough for you to play devil's advocate here. It's a stretch role.
But DJ, the fact that you ranked him a little further back in the pack, and you know, you weren't alone. There were a lot of people that had some doubts, minor doubts. If you thought those were easily correctable flaws or things that could be corrected immediately, he would have been near the top of the class. You have to be surprised, especially getting the front row view, to be how incredible he's been right out of the gate. How did this happen?
Well, first of all, like I was in responding to Greg, I said it made me the happiest person in the world because trust me. When you're assigned to a team and you work for a team to call 16 games a year, you want to have somebody be fun to watch. And this team with Tyrod Taylor was going to be very conservative, play low scoring games, kind of rely on your defense. That's fine, but this has turned into one of the more dynamic and explosive offenses, courtesy of Justin Herbert. And the lessons that you learn, and this is when the scouting side of things, you're going to make these types of mistakes every single year. So you try and figure out what can you learn from it. And one of the things I thought of was when you're playing for a coach that's either a defensive-minded college coach or an offensive line head coach, which Mario Cristobal was, sometimes you can tend to try and rein in some of your quarterback play. You don't want turnovers. You're going to be able to run the ball, play great defense. So you can, for lack of a better phrase, you can take a little bit of their stinger away. Like just be a little bit more cautious, a little more conservative. It worked. I mean, and that's no shot at Mario Cristobal. I mean, the guy won the Pac-12 and won the Rose Bowl. It's a formula that works. But I made the note to myself, next time when you see a guy that's that big, athletic, smart, tough, competitive, while maybe some of the gaps aren't filled in, let's, you know, just be smart about it and say, okay, I think once he gets the opportunity, he'll be able to figure those things out. So that's the lesson that I learned there on that evaluation.
DJ, my one concern, because, you know, scouting issues aside, and, you know, you're talking to three bloggers that don't watch a lot of college football, so I'm going to take your word on these things. But, you know, are you going to – now you're sitting on a gold mine here with a quarterback who looks like maybe the next version of Tom Brady.
Stop cackling.
I mean, are you going to turn into, like, Scott Zolak on these broadcasts as this young man's career blossoms into total stardom? I'm a little concerned about you. Please.
Oh, man. I saw Zolak when the Chargers lost to the Patriots in the playoffs a couple years ago. And it was a freezing game, if you remember, freezing in Foxborough. And so me and Money, like, come walking out. And normally, the radio guys, it's kind of a cool little fraternity. I've learned this over the last couple years. But everybody's just real kind to one another. We do appearances on each other's pregame shows. And you get to know a lot of these guys, especially inside the division. You see them over and over again. We passed Zolak, and I think it was right before the game, like in the hallway, and it was straight game face, not going to acknowledge us, straight ahead, we do not exist, and it was everything that I imagined it would be ahead of time. It was on fantastic.
No one has told Zolak that he's not on the Patriots anymore. All right, look, I want to close up this feud, hopefully, between Rosenthal and Jeremiah, but look, since we're talking this game, Chargers, Broncos, let's touch on the Broncos real quick here, DJ. And Drew Lock, another guy that a lot of high hopes for him this season. It hasn't panned out. Are you worried about him watching his tape so far this season?
Well, I mean, you still see some of those glimpses. He just hasn't been consistent. So I'm still hopeful there. I like that 40 start rule, right? If we can get 40 starts, that's, you know, 2.5 years worth of starts before we get a feel for a quarterback. So I don't think we know enough about Drew Lock yet. But I'll tell you guys, the most surprising thing that I saw looking at the Broncos this week, you know who's actually playing pretty good is Garrett Bowles. How about
he's
that?
Amazing.
I mean, he had been he's played really well. I mean, and for all the heat that he's taken and them not picking up his fifth-year option, all those things. If you look, I watched a cut-up of all their, you know, 10-plus runs, 10-plus yard runs. And if they're either running left behind him or they're running right and cutting back and getting to him. He's played really well. Mm.
Last week was an embarrassment for the Broncos. But, man, they have a lot of juice on that offense. I'm still not giving up. I'm fascinated by this game because both these teams are better than their 2-4 record, I think. And whoever wins, I think, is kind of a sneaky playoff contender because the Broncos have a lot of juice. They're really well coached on defense. Last week was an embarrassment. And DJ knows it's nothing personal. I'm just saying – you know, when it comes to Herbert, what Herbert is thinking every time he's in one of those little calls with DJ, you know, they talk to the radio guys. He's thinking, this guy had me below Andrew Thomas. I think Andrew Thomas just gave up another sack, actually, and this guy has me ranked behind him. And I do have a little problem of people jumping in our mentions, these little DJ fanboys at our network, like, you know, Giardi and Brendan come in here. They come in here after he does the slippers. The slippers comment, and they're like, oh, howitzer, score one for DJ. I mean, are you kidding me? I came in with a machine gun. He's giving me free slippers. Those things look comfy. I'm fine with that. Give me a break.
Greg remembers every slight, just to warn you. Around.
That is very on brand, Greg. I love it. You're opening up the war. You're saying, bring more of these people at me. I enjoy it.
Yeah, this is what I've learned. You know what I've learned? This is why my feud with Dan has been a good training ground for this, Greg, because I made a Twitter mistake with Dan, which is I replied with my comeback. So I replied, I didn't retweet. So when you look at it, you're like, man, Dan hits me, and look at all the retweets and all the mentions and all the buzz. And then I reply and I get no juice because if they don't follow me and Dan, they're not even seeing it. So now I've tried to use the power of the platform and just bring the full force of the army at you with a retweet. So I'm learning.
You've got to get
Twitter
those 12 or 13
Move
the
along.
Sticks listeners on your side. You know, that's your army.
Wow.
I'm just glad I can bring it at you too, DJ. I'm not always nice.
I'm just glad to see that Sessler jumped in here, because I was wondering, having been on the line while you guys were getting ready to go on the air and watching him trying to figure out something that probably all four of my children could have figured out in 30 seconds, how to make his microphone work. I'm just happy Mark was able to join us for this conversation. It was a little dicey there for a minute.
Yeah, I'm dealing with a technical apocalypse in my house, and times are tough. And I you know,
it's the green button, Mark. It's the green button. The red button turns you off. The green button is what turns you on. That's how this whole thing works.
Well, DJ, you've acquitted yourself quite well here. Good luck. I heard you're starting up a podcast. We'll see how that goes. And thank you for joining the Around the NFL podcast, which also is on television. This is great.
I don't speak German, so I just hope all your fans see me there. And nice to see you.
All right, get rid of him.
Yes, it is time now for Road to Victory, presented by the United States Marine Corps. I am up, and I'll tell you what, Mark, this used to be easier when the Browns stunk. You know, we would just leave the draft. Mm. We'd always leave it to you, and you'd go grab him in the back of the round. But now when I look at the slate, I can't just overlook the best games of the week because Cleveland's involved, and I wouldn't expect you to do the same thing with the Jets, but we certainly don't have to worry about that right now. So I am selecting Raiders at Browns, and we can sort it out personally, Mark, off air. I just like this game a lot. The Raiders are very kind of hard team to figure out. This is the week where no one cares about them or thinks that they have any chance to compete because they did not play well in week 8 and a lopsided loss. But you know what? It was right before the bye that they went to Arrowhead and spanked the Chiefs. So there you go. So you don't know which version of the Raiders you get. The Browns, man, they're even tougher to figure out. And no Odell Beckham, obviously, this week or for the rest of the season after he tore his ACL. But just a huge, huge game for Baker Mayfield. I mean, it was his performance against Cincinnati. And yes, it is the Bengals, and you have to keep that in mind. But his ability to, you know, when he started 0 for 5 with a pick, it was all set up for this to be the week where the coach, Stefanski, is getting tons of questions about Case Keenum. Instead, he completes about 400 passes in a row and throws 5 touchdowns, and nobody's talking that way. So the Browns feel like they're in a good spot. They're at home. The Raiders are a team that's hot and cold, but both these teams are kind of hard to judge right now who's going to show up when kickoff comes.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it seems like we say this every week about Cleveland, but this to me reads like a shootout. And, you know, Cleveland's defense, I think they're still in search of themselves in many ways. But I will say, watching every one of their games closely, that their best players on defense have impacted them tremendously. I don't think that they're anywhere close to their record without the combination of Myles Garrett, Ronnie Harrison, and Denzel Ward. Ronnie Harrison, who they traded for earlier in the year. You look at the two Bengals games, Myles Garrett's strip sacks of Joe Burrow completely opened the door to those wins. Last week, Myles Garrett strip sacks Joe Burrow. It's recovered by Ronnie Harrison. Leads to a Browns field goal. The Browns win that game by 3. Week 2, Garrett strip sacks Burrow at the Bengals' 1-yard line. It's recovered. The Browns score a touchdown. They win that game by 4 points. These shootouts do not come out positively for Cleveland unless these players on defense are creating these turnovers. They don't do a lot well as a unit, but they do that. And I would point to the Colts game also, when Ronnie Harrison picked off Phillip Rivers on a 47-yard pick 6. They won that game by 9, and the Colts had the ball at the end. So, you know, for a unit that is, you know, maligned and verbally kind of taken apart by critics, understandably, these guys and Myles Garrett, you know, you mentioned a defensive player of the year candidate and Fred Warner. Myles Garrett right now is the leader in the clubhouse for that award because of these game-changing plays.
I'd still go Aaron Donald, but those would be my top two. I love this game because there's a lot about this season that feels familiar, and these two teams are different. I think one of these teams is going to make the playoffs. I think they both have a good chance, and so this sets up as a big one. You're right, Mark. It sets up as a shootout, but can Baker Mayfield keep up in a shootout again? A lot of last week's throws were his first read, well-called plays. He gets to it. I think that could be there this week again because he's playing a bad Raiders defense. The Browns have played a lot of bad defenses, and so I think he can keep up in a shootout. But it got me thinking. I got a comp for you. I don't know if you're going to like it, Mark Sessler. You know who Baker Mayfield reminds me of the more and more I watch him? He's a little bit of like a Kirk Cousins with a stronger arm. Like if everything's okay and set up for him – it's there and he can run an offense, but it's a little bit of a system guy. He's not going to make too many plays off structure. And if the pressure gets there, it can go a little like haywire. And there's these little brain, like just blips, but against a bad defense like this week, he puts up a lot of numbers.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, the comp works because, you know, this is the same coach operating Kirk Cousins last year, and you see a lot of the same stuff. I thought you were going to go like Eric Hipple or something. So I'm not that disappointed by the comp, but I think he's got a little bit more to offer in the yes, kind of flair and the exciting plays that I don't see from Kirk Cousins. But, you know, last week, you're right, Dan, this was an important game for Baker Mayfield because had that gone south, the questions would have been ceaseless about bringing in Case Keenum.
And here's the thing, because, yeah, I think like a lot of people, we're all on the fence with Baker. Maybe this is a shootout, but maybe this is another game where Baker doesn't play well, and then all that criticism and that questioning comes back. He's just kind of a hard dude to figure out. Maybe he's definitely a better actor in commercials than Kirk Cousins. I think he has more charisma, that's for sure.
He's got more charisma. You know who's getting me more excited watching him, though, is Derek Carr lately. Like, I kind of trust the Raiders just as much in a shootout. He's playing more aggressive. They threw more deep balls over the last 2 weeks than they did in the first four combined. Like, they are embracing what they are, which is an offensive team, and they're getting a lot healthier. They should get Trent Brown back this week. They're getting Bryan Edwards back. There's a lot of guys on injured reserve who might come back for the Raiders. And so I think it's going to be tough for that Browns pass rush to get to Derek Carr. Myles Garrett needs a little help from those other guys who are making a lot of money too, Ogunjobi and Olivier Vernon.
All right, that was Road to Victory presented by the United States Marine Corps. And what a fine game that will be. I'm happy about the placement in the draft there, Mark. Again, that was not personal. You are now up after I've taken the Browns off the board. So how do you react to that?
Yeah, I'm slightly annoyed with what you did there, but we can, you know, like you said, we can sort that out off the air, not on NFL Network. I'm going to go. There are a lot of good games this week. This is probably one of the better weeks out there. I'm going to go Rams at Dolphins. I mean, why not sign up for a chance to see Tua in his first NFL start? And I know that they love the idea of giving him the bye week to prepare, but you've got Aaron Donald on the other side. I want to ask you, though, I think it's time that we go and do something a little different and play one of our favorite games from our podcast, all right? Ooh. And that is What's More Likely?
What's More Likely?
And I'm going to pose a question to you guys, okay? What's more likely, all right, for this Dolphins team, the 3-3 Dolphins turn ultra frisky behind the electric Tua and snatch the 7th wild card spot, making Greg Rosenthal's loins tingle as he observes their rise on Game Pass, or a schedule packed with the NFC West, the Chargers, the Chiefs, the Raiders reveals that Miami is still basically an average outfit in need of another big season before they start to think about January.
I like that you're kind of catching that I'm digging this Dolphins team. Again, something that's different. I think it's more likely that they got to wait a year and they're closer to 8-8. Because to me, 8-8 with this roster and Tua at quarterback is a victory. And the AFC is so deep that they're going to need to win games like this. But this is our first chance to see if Tua is an upgrade. I don't think enough conversation about the change from Ryan Fitzpatrick recognize the possibility that this offense is going to look very different, short passes, using Tua's athleticism, and that there's a chance in the long run without turnovers that actually it's better for this Dolphins team. I'm not saying that's likely to happen, but I think there is absolutely a chance. We've seen Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow, how ready for the NFL they are. Now we get to start seeing if Tua is ready as well.
Yeah, I'm going to just like go optimistic because it'd be more fun that it puts them in the race more. They're looking for the Herbert lift, and that is capital H, right, capital F. And I think it's a worthy dice roll for Brian Flores and the Dolphins. It's like the type of move that lowers their floor but raises their ceiling. And if he struggles, well, just stick with him. That's it. The only mistake you can make is if you get in your head too much as an organization and say, Tua's lost 3 starts in a row. He's not passing very well. Let's get Fitzmagic back in there to say, no. Once you make this move, you stay with this move, and hopefully Tua hits the ground running. You get the Herbert lift, because if you do, this goes from a team that's just, like you said, on the periphery of the playoff race to a genuinely fun team to watch. And guess what? Listen, the Patriots are a mess. The Bills, I know they finally got off the losing schneid against the Jets, but they didn't play very well in that game either. This division is a little more wide open than it's been in many years.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love that Brian Flores basically said that he told Tua, just be yourself. Don't worry about being something else. Just be who you are. And this is an electric player. And, you know, Dolphins fans, sneaky, have gone decades post Dan Marino with an absolute, you know, dearth of non-talent at quarterback. And I mean, you had a nice little run there for a bit with Ryan Tannehill, but that was the old average milquetoast Ryan Tannehill. Tua is someone that could completely change this franchise for years and years to come and change the life of Brian Flores and every assistant coach on that team if this thing works out. So I cannot wait to see how this goes.
Except for that outside linebackers coach. I don't think he has any business being in the league. I don't know who that is. I don't know if that's a position. All right. I'll throw out a what's more likely. I bet this. What's more likely? The Rams offense with Sean McVay at the controls improves and gets back to being seen as one of the NFC's best units in that regard. Or this is now a defensive team and the Rams win because Aaron Donald, he leads the way and they win a bunch of games 24-17.
It's more likely that the offense leads the way because I think they kind of are already. I mean, they're ranked higher in offense than defense and DVOA. I think people are missing that there's not a lot of flash on this offense. There's a lot of efficiency. Darrell Henderson is one of the best young running backs in the league right now. They are blowing holes open for him. They're a team that plays at a slow pace, so their yards aren't that big. But in terms of yards per rush, in terms of yards per pass, Jared Goff is near the top. Darrell Henderson's near the top. They don't make a ton of mistakes. They're a little boring. I'll give you that. Like, it's not as fun as those old Rams team, but to me, they're deadly efficient. And yeah, they got the superstars on defense. It's a nice combo. And I don't know if they win this week. I think it's a coin flip game, but I'm going to give the win to the Rams and that the offense does play pretty well.
That's a great answer, Greg. And you backed it up with some data. You showed the receipts, as they say. I guess it is. I'm thinking back. Remember in the good old days where people gathered and people went to stadiums and there were no masks. And I believe it was a Rams-Vikings Thursday night game. It was like peak yes. Jared Goff, Sean McVay era. I think this might have been early in the 2018 season. And he's just bombing away and Brandon Cooks is streaking down for 70 yards for touchdowns. I guess I miss that version of the Rams offense, but I guess you could say they are more efficient. And as long as they're winning, this is fine.
Well, I mean, their identity under Sean McVay is going to have to stay offense. I loved how they played with pace against the Bears and caused disruption with quick snaps and, you know, caught Chicago off guard. I mean, I feel like this is part one of this new Rams offense. And maybe part two is the second half of this season or even next season where, you know, this is a different attack than it was in the past. And I think that shows a lot of flexibility by Sean McVay. I think that Super Bowl loss caused a lot of introspection and he came out with a completely different looking attack. I do see them go to sleep at times, though, in the passing game. There's been a couple misconnections with Goff and Kupp. And when that's not the case, when they're on, they're still very dangerous. But I don't know if I can really count on them week to week on offense yet.
All right, let's move on. Greg, you're up next in the draft.
All right, I need a late afternoon game, so I'm going Saints against the Bears, and there's a lot of complaining going on in New Orleans right now about this defense. There's even more complaining in Chicago about their offense, but this looks like a get-right game for this Saints defense. There's miscommunication problems in the secondary. You know who's great to play in a week that happens? The Bears, especially if Allen Robinson is not in this game. He's in the concussion protocol. There's a lot of complaining in New Orleans that the pass rush isn't really that good, that Cameron Jordan's not getting it done, and old two-first Marcus Davenport's been quiet until that game-winning sack last week. Don't hear people chirping about that. Davenport.
Greg's a Saints fan, by the way, everybody. It's official.
I'm not really a Saints fan. I'm trying to say that you should get off Davenport, but you know what? This is a matchup they should win because the Bears offensive line has been dreadful this season and every defensive line is winning against them. And that's why I feel really confident the Saints defense balls out and they get a win on the road. And that's why I'm locking it up. Ooh. I'm not waiting around.
Ooh, I like that. And spicy.
Let's, you know, we're going to take a look at the lock of the week standings later, but let's give some respect to Greg. He is 7-0 to start the season. So when he's locking up, the Rainmaker locks a team up right now. It's best you pay attention.
Cash money.
Yes, you should pay attention.
Rain falling from the sky. Can we do that? I think so.
I don't know if that's allowed. the Bears, there is some like Adam Gase light stuff going on around this team now. It's starting to, the Nagy heat is getting turned up and they kind of need a performance here, a home game. They're coming off the loss, but they're still obviously in great shape at 5-2. But if you bomb out against the Saints, then people are going to really start to ask questions about, is this a team that's about to kind of go up in flames? So that's what I'm looking for. I know Nick Foles is never going to turn this into an explosive offense. They don't have a ton of big-time players, especially if their number one wide receiver isn't involved with the game plan. But find a way to get this offense going, Matt Nagy, because that's what you were hired for.
Well, I'm with you on the Adam Gase light, and it's really just like the issue with bad teams where one side of the ball is holding the entire operation hostage. I mean, when will the infighting begin? When will the anonymous quotes start to filter in from the defense? Because they're basically saying, we don't win games unless this defense scores points or sets up very easy points for the offense. It becomes almost tiresome to discuss Chicago's offense because the narrative used to be the Mitch Trubisky thing, and they went out and they got Nick Foles. And if you really wanted to paint an optimistic picture, maybe you could sign up for Nick Foles as someone that you could have as a starter, but it still always felt like a patch. And the patch is ripping off, and there's just a big hole underneath it. And the hole is basically Chicago, nice record to start the season. I wouldn't be surprised if they're 6-8 at some point. I just feel like this thing is heading into troubled waters.
Right, and when you're a great offense and a bad defense, you're the Seahawks or you're the Packers. But like when you're a good defense with a terrible offense, then you're the Bears. Keep an eye on Marquez Callaway. He really impressed me for the Saints last week. They could use another receiving option. He's a little banged up, but if he can become a legitimate threat week after week, then they can keep surviving without Michael Thomas, because we still don't know if Michael Thomas is ever going to return for the Saints.
We might not ever see that man again. And I see you. I see all of you out there, all you people that counted out and threw dirt on Drew Brees' grave after 2 weeks, and oh, he can't play anymore. He's got an arm that basically matches a six-year-old in my son's Zoom kindergarten class. Whatever. I don't see it so much anymore. I know he's not going to be a deep downfield passer, but he never really was in the first place. This guy is getting it done. He was super efficient this past week. That offense looked really good with Drew Brees at the controls. So everybody calm down. We'll be right back after this. Greg, it snakes back to you.
Well, earlier in this show, you took the Browns from Mark. I'm going to go ahead and take the Jets from you. You didn't see that coming.
No,
it's
I didn't.
Chiefs,
that's
Jets.
A gift.
What are you doing?
It's early. I like having bad games as my backup games in the morning. If I'm going to be focused on Ravens Steelers, you know, let's just have a Chiefs Jets blowout as my backup. And you know what? Any game with Patrick Mahomes is watchable. And for such a bad team that the Jets are, they do have something to watch every week, which is the Sam Darnold development and whether he's going to ever show it. And this is a really tough matchup for him, I think, because Steve Spagnuolo, if he specializes in anything, it's cooking up these young quarterbacks. He did it last week to Drew Lock. They love showing a lot of things before the snap, after the snap. I think the Chiefs are more dynamic defensively with Bashaud Breeland back. He's a really underrated cornerback. And I think if you're a Sam Darnold believer, the number one concern for him is his processing time. It's his decision-making. It's his slow decision-making. And maybe that's all Adam Gase's fault. I don't really know. But to me, that's the thing that really hasn't moved forward, that you can just see his mind not moving quick enough, holding the ball. And that's kind of like a rookie quarterback thing. And we haven't seen a ton of that. And this is a really tough matchup, I think, for him in that regard. My mind.
I do wonder. You go ahead, Dan.
You look at the base numbers. You look at the analytics. Darnold has regressed in year three. And so if you're the Jets, you have to figure out, like, is that on him? Which it obviously partly is because it's him. Or was he broken by a completely inefficient and out of date and ineffective Adam Gase offense? That's what they have to figure out. He is sometimes slow in the processing, and he'll miss receivers. And he threw one of the worst interceptions of his career last week as an example. It was off his back foot into like triple coverage right before the half against the Bills that essentially marred what was otherwise a fairly strong first half for the Jets offense with Dowell calling the plays, the offensive coordinator, for the first time. So, yeah, that's what it's all about for the Jets, figuring out if he is the guy. Although, if they go 0-15 or 0-16 or 1-15,
oh yeah,
if the decision, even if he plays well, is almost taken out of his hands, and he's auditioning really for 31 other teams.
I you can feel his career turning if that happens, and he'll be somewhere else. And that may be the best thing for Sam Darnold in the end, because, you know, we don't have a really crystal clear answer to this, but what is the coaching impact on Sam Darnold's career under Adam Gase? I mean, the idea that Adam Gase has been sold to us over the years as a quarterback whisperer, well, I don't think he's saying anything. You're not whispering any words in Sam Darnold's ear at this point. I don't know what's going on with that team. It's a depressing watch. You want to see someone like Denzel Mims, develop as well. I mean, I got to wonder, though, if you're Andy Reid and you've got Le'Veon Bell coming into this situation against the Jets, are they cooking something up special there? Is it going to be one of those types of games where they really allow him to show the Jets who he is? I mean, the only thing is, like, no, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is tied for second in the NFL with 10 plus yard rushes. Yeah, I'm not saying I want that.
This is the game you bring in Bell.
This will be a setup for Le'Veon Bell. Right.
This is the game you bring Bell in for, because you have a big lead and you don't want Helaire to be too banged up. And you know what? Bell is running better this year. I thought he was for the Jets than he did a year ago. I'm not saying he's old Le'Veon Bell, but I think he's a good, useful running back, and with being surrounded by the talent that he is in Kansas City, he's obviously going to have more production now.
Yeah, I would just like calm down with anybody that's like, oh, Le'Veon Bell revenge game. The Jets gave him a bigger contract than any other team would have given him in free agency last year, and it didn't work out because the Jets stink. But it's not like it was like something where he needs to get his revenge, I guess, against Adam Gase, but Adam Gase doesn't know how to judge anybody. I mean, it's just like, you're right, though. You know what's going to happen. I mean, he's going to have a huge game because that's the way it works for the Jets, and then I'll have to talk about it on Sunday night, but that's life.
Yeah, I'm doing you a favor. I will trade with you after, you know, we get off the air if you want. If you want to watch the Jets, I'm not going to take that away from you, but maybe I'm doing you a favor because it does feel like the Chiefs' offensive stats are pretty low. Like, Tyreek Hill's not even on pace for 1,000 yards. Mahomes is pretty low. It's like, don't they need a game where they just put up a lot of yards?
It's
like,
bombs this away week for the Chiefs.
Might not be a fun one.
Who feels a 50 burger coming on? I certainly do. I do. Yeah. I always watch the Jets. The only time I don't watch the Jets is when Joe Flacco's playing and Adam Gase is the coach. Okay. If one of those factors is not involved, I'll be watching it on my own TV. But Mekhi Becton, he's back and healthy. I hope Jameson Crowder's involved. And Denzel Mims did look good, I will say, in the first half before that offense dried up.
You take the Browns game away from me, but you handed me the Flacco Jets era to observe on Sunday, and it literally affected my mood and my overall experience.
You know what?
You know, this is not
that wasn't right. I apologize. All right, let's move. By the way, the people in the desert, they are flying with this with that. That's a 3-touchdown differential plus over there. Crazy stuff. Mark, you're up.
Well, I'm going to go with a game that I find quite interesting because this team, New England, I'm going New England Buffalo. To me, this like Patriots team, no matter how ugly things get, for some reason, they're still fascinating to me. And I mean, they are in an ultra, these are two offenses in a bit of a slump right now. I mean, Buffalo, you know, came out of the gate real hot to start the season, not the case right now. And with the Patriots, I mean, the Cam Newton experience that I think peaked in Seattle has been horrendous. I mean, he just does not look right to me. It's almost like it does remind you that when you had someone like Brady in that system who was just processing before and after the snap with such magical abilities that you put anyone else in there and it's not, you know, they had the Hoyer Stidham disaster from a few weeks ago and you thought you get Cam back and you're going to get Cam Seahawks Cam and that's all gone away. We have Julian Edelman has just had surgery today, but Julian Edelman, is that a huge loss right now? He's not been involved in the offense on any level. I think they want to run the ball. I mean, I made a joke about it on our other episode from the week about, you know, what could happen to New England. They would just went totally into a run mode where they run the ball like 65 times a game, but that's not working. And to me, this team, like I'm ready to let the ship sail on New England because I think they were badly outcoached, outplayed last week against the Niners. And it revealed a roster that's not been built well.
Well, this is the week. I mean, this is their season right now. They lose to the Bills to go 2-5, and what, they're four games back in the loss column? That's that, and they've shown who they are. They win in Buffalo, and then it's an ugly AFC East where you got to consider them a contender, the Dolphins a contender, and the Bills as a team that have serious struggles because the Bills should win this game. Sean McDermott has never beaten Bill Belichick, and he's got way more talent. He's got way more juice on offense. The Patriots' defense's struggles, to me, are as concerning as Cam Newton's, because they're a little more surprising. And you got to play a Josh Allen team who started great, but the last 3 weeks, they're averaging 17 points a week. The only teams that are worse than them right now over the last 3 weeks are the Patriots, a nice matchup, the Jets, no surprise, and the Cowboys with their rotating quarterback. So it's like the Bills off, and the Bills haven't been playing great defenses either. So they need to get going, and some teams are really backing off Allen, making them work for these long drives and hoping Allen makes a mistake and gives them some chances. The Jets had chances to intercept him a few times. The Patriots need to take advantage when he gives them those chances.
You know, this is kind of bittersweet for me. I've been waiting for years for the death of the Patriots as a relevant franchise in the NFL. And it's finally here, and the Jets are historically awful. So they have nothing to do with the Patriots coming back down to the
next
rest
week,
of us.
Buddy. Jets, yeah. Pats.
Oh, that would be sweet. But you know what? It's like the Bills have to be the ones. Like, if the Jets get... You're the one. You're the one that's got to do it.
Right.
You're the one that lets everyone know that this didn't happen for nothing. It's the guy from Rocky IV, the trainer, that was telling Rocky after Apollo was killed that he needs to step up to Drago. Well, come on, Bills. Don't take care of business here. This is a wounded Patriots organization that they're not very strong in terms of personnel. They know that Tom Brady's lighting it up in Tampa. It's like adding more pain and misery around that building potentially, which I love. And the Bills, despite not playing very well, go win a football game in your building here and really, really put the clamps on the Patriots and put them in a situation where you can almost stick a fork in them. What were you going to say, Greg?
I was just saying, I don't have much hope, but if there's ever a matchup that favors the Patriots, I think this is it. Not just that they've won six straight, but the styles of the way they play, that the Bills defense tends to give up these short passes in the running game, give up these long drives, you shorten the game. And the Patriots defense, if they do one thing well, I think they can just slow an offense down with their cornerbacks, and the Bills haven't shown they can run the ball. I think you beat the Patriots by just like beating them up. And right now the Bills offense and their offensive line, they're not really like beating anyone up.
Here is the darkest timeline scenario. Sam Darnold, you know, as the season progresses here, starts to show something, and he takes out New England. And by then, Bill Belichick has already spoken to Cam Newton and said, you're going to do a favor for me. You're going to continue to throw interceptions and not touchdowns. I'm going to set you up financially for life. You're going to have a high-rise, you know, penthouse apartment in Foxborough for the rest of your life. Things are going to look good. You got to take a bullet here for me, and we're going to reverse engineer this, allow the Jets to beat us twice. We will go on to into the end.
Are we in our second against Patriots the Jets. Fantasy of the week for Sessler? How did we get here again?
I'm just saying, that other one
Mark
feels
is a
less
secret
realistic.
A Patriots fan. Remember, Wes used to like the Patriots because Wes
Mark
loves greatness,
loves
so that makes sense. Now I Mark
like Belichick,
is into it.
I do.
He likes bad Patriots
I just think
teams.
He's...
It reminds him of the Browns.
if they ever, you know, tanked for Trevor and they got 4 or 5 weeks into this thing and said, we know how to win, but we also know how to lose better than anyone. Good coaches would know how to lose a game better than anyone too. So Belichick, secret edge, Dan.
Okay. But Stephon Gilmore, by the way, looking at his phone in between series, seeing if he's been traded yet. Maybe Stephon Diggs sneaks behind him a couple of times. I love the Bills here. I love it just for the fact that they're a better team. I love what it represents if they win. And that's why I'm going to lock up the team from Good Western one. New York to put the Patriots underground for 2020. And that brings the draft over to the old Zeuser. Oh, that one caught me by surprise. Don't you hate when that happens? All right.
Yeah, you don't pack these breaks in and suddenly we're, you know, you're scampering for
all
the
right.
next game.
Let's go with Tennessee at Cincinnati. How about that? Let's see how the Titans are looking after a tough loss at home, but not a loss to hang your head over. I mean, it was what it was. A game where you fell behind 27-7. And then once you figure out a way to get a couple stops and get your offense on the field, you damn near tied the game. And a big issue for the Titans against the Steelers was third downs. They could not get off the field. I think Pittsburgh was 13 of 18 in that game. And that led to just a destruction in the time of possession realm. And that's ultimately what got the Titans beat. So I don't take that as a loss like, oh, time to take restock and where what we think about the Titans. I still think it's a very good team, and I think they're going to take care of business, obviously, in Cincinnati. But you know what? Joe Burrow makes these games interesting. This isn't watching late period Andy Dalton or who are some of the other Hammond-Eggers that played when Dalton wasn't in Cincinnati? A.J. McCarron. I think there was somebody else.
Jeff Driscoll.
Yeah,
Jeff Driscoll. I mean, I think their names were Ham and Egger.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So Burrow, if nothing else, makes the Bengals fun to watch because he keeps it close. They lose all these close games, but that's part of like the journey for a team, figuring out how to win close games. The Titans have played a lot of close games this year. It's in Cincinnati, so it would not surprise me if we have another close game. But ultimately, I think the Titans get back on the winning track in Week 8.
I would view the Bengals as trap game material for every team they play. I mean, outside of maybe the upper echelon, like Pittsburgh Ravens type teams, because Burrow, the one thing I love about Burrow, and this is what takes, other quarterbacks years to grow into, or maybe they never do, but he sees and feels pressure pretty well, which, fits well with an offensive line that just is a little bit above a total disaster. I mean, but he keeps them in these games, and I think it's his running ability too. There was a play last week against the Browns where they were stuck in like a 3rd-and-11 scenario, and he just saw this open prairie land to just dart into. And it's like a lot of quarterbacks just don't see that, or they do that when they shouldn't. He doesn't give up on plays. He's a fighter. I mean, he is just a magician in the pocket. And he's not been perfect, but I think he is growing every week. And I wouldn't be surprised if he gives Tennessee a little bit of a run for their money, because I mean, he basically almost beat the Browns twice. It's their defense that forces him into these shootouts.
Well, this is a sneaky good matchup. You mentioned the third downs, Dan. The Titans were last place in third downs on defense before they played Pittsburgh. So now they're last by a mile. Like, it's a sneaky bad defense. Not a lot of pass rush juice. My guy, Jadeveon Clowney's having the worst season, I think, of his career. He's banged up as he always is, but he's not playing well through it. Remember Vic Beasley? Remember the Titans signed Vic Beasley? Last week, Vic Beasley made a play, and I was like, oh, yeah, Vic Beasley's on
that was
the,
like
the
most, like, in terms of doomed acquisitions that everyone knew was terrible even before it started. That has to be right near the top of the list. It never had a chance.
It's not working. And for fans who don't watch the Bengals every week, who last saw them on Thursday night, they're a different team right now. I think they're a lot better offensively even than they were in week two. Their line is playing better. I'm not saying it's great, but it's played better. They've had a couple weeks where they protected Burrow pretty well. T. Higgins is a legit starter. I mean, their first two picks look really good. And Zach Taylor, I think, has the offense looking like you would want it to look, that you feel better about it. I can't tell. I know this is your corner, Dan, but I'm with you on it. I can't tell if Zach Taylor's like the worst 3-19-1 coach in NFL history or the best. You know what I mean? Because they're in every game.
But there's no such thing as the best 3-19-1 coach.
He's probably the only one, so I guess he's both. Yeah. But I mean, I can't tell because they do look better. To Mark's point, I really do think they're improving, but they can never get these wins.
I mean, Taylor went to the Anthony Lynn school of how to manage close games, because it's like, they're in these games, but they're not winning them. And it's hard. I think Zach Taylor flies under the radar a little bit. But I mean, if you get to the end of the season, how do you assess?
I think he'll be safe because of the Browns history. I mean, the Browns, yeah. I mean, the family, the Browns, the Bengals. I think he'll be safe. If Burrow's playing well, I don't think you mess with that.
If we say that Zach Taylor is flying under the radar enough times on this show, will he cease to be flying under the radar? Because I feel like we preface every statement about him that no one really pays attention to him. But he's got to find a way to win, I think, some of these games in the back half of the season. Just to ensure management, is like, okay, we've seen it. We've seen it. Joe Burrow, by the way, is on pace for 42 pass attempts per game, which would be the most ever by a rookie since 1970, breaking Andrew Luck's record. So I don't know what that really says. It tells us that the Joe Mixon thing hasn't worked out this year. It tells us that they believe in so much in this kid that they're handing him the game script and saying, let's win with you. And it also, it does leave him in line to get hit a lot, which has happened. So I don't know. They're fun to watch, but you do that offensive line. It scares you. If you're having him drop back that many times, God forbid, he gets hit and falls the wrong way. All right. Am I up again? It's snaking to me. Look at the old Zeus on his heels. The biggest of all spots. All right, let's grab. Do we have any late games left? No.
Well, there's going to be a lot of late trading this week.
Yeah. Let me grab Colts at Lions. Colts at Lions. You know, Detroit, that was the win they needed. That was such a big win for the Lions because they've lost so many close games under Patricia. It's the same old Lions mentality that permeates the place and it sinks seasons. But being able to outright steal a game they had no business winning against the Falcons, where Todd Gurley falls into the end zone and then Stafford runs them down the field 74 yards in like 60 seconds without a timeout. And now if they can just find a way at home to beat the Colts, you take a look at their schedule after Indy and it softens up a little bit. And then all of a sudden, the Lions left for dead earlier this year are right in the mix in the NFC in the wild card race. So, but let's see if they can do it, because if we've learned one thing, and Kevin Patra, if he's listening, is nodding his head right now, our resident Lions fans at NFL Media, Lions fan at NFL Media, if we've learned one thing, they tend to fall on their face when they are presented with these opportunities. And the Colts, obviously, Greg, are not a layup. This is a very good defense. I know they've been kind of up and down offensively this season, but this will be a test for the Lions. If they are under the radar as a kind of a halfway decent, potentially good team, though, you should be able to hold serve at home.
Yeah, I think the Lions defense has come out of their bye playing pretty well. And this is an offense, the Colts, that is, that you should slow down. They don't have a running game. You're curious if the Phillip Rivers resurgence, which lasted about two quarters against Cincinnati, and he was hot on the mid-range game, whether that keeps up right now. But like, this is a game we're in week eight. I don't have a feel of these teams, which maybe is just who they are. This is a game that I know Chris Wessling doesn't want to watch. Two dome teams, you know, at 10 a.m., drab uniforms, in the soft middle of the NFL, without, you know, really explosive offenses. Like, that's what this game is to me right now.
I'm going
to
defend the Colts uniforms. I do not think they're bad, and I like the logo. It's classic.
That's fair. It's more just like when it's at the indoors and the lighting. I don't know.
All right. Yeah, I think with Phillip Rivers, what happens if he bombs out again? Is there any way, Greg, that you see Jacoby Brissett play without an injury in 2020?
Well, it'd have to be just a terrible month by Rivers. I watch this Colts team. And I do wonder, like, is their offensive line as good as everyone says it is every time they mention it? Because they can't run the ball and. I don't know if Rivers has been protected as well as you'd expect. They do get Darius Leonard back, though. I think the games without Darius Leonard for the Colts defense showed you why he is one of the more valuable defensive players in the league. They kind of just weren't the same. And they're getting healthy in a few spots, like Michael Pittman might be back, Kamiko Ture, this speed rusher I like. Like, the Colts are one of those teams that have a lot of guys coming back throughout the season, so that should make them a little bit better. They should win this game. Give the Titans a run.
I like the Lions. I think they're going to shake it up. Mark, where are you on the Lions bandwagon, by the way? I know you were on a burro, a donkey, trying to catch up to the bandwagon you abandoned in week two. Were you able to hop back on, or did it pull away and leave you in the dust?
Well, I mean, it's picking up steam, but I mean, you're the one that suggested that I was on like a slow animal. I said I was going to take a vehicle and follow the bandwagon, and the vehicle is swift. It's catching up. I'm about to jump off the vehicle, kind of Indiana Jones style, into the back of the bandwagon and find a seat there. I'm firmly involved.
What about the other people in the national media, like Amina Kimes? There are a few of you that were talking big about the Lions. Will they welcome you back to the bandwagon if you do pull off the Indiana Jones and make it back up?
I mean, I think that we all experienced a pause in our fandom. I didn't hear a lot from Mina Kimes during that first month, but Mina Kimes is probably sitting up in the front seat, nice air condition on her, I'm sure, you know, getting snacks at drive-thrus. I'm stuck in the back, so I got a ways to go here.
You're wearing a helmet, right? You're a man in your 40s. I would be the same way. Do I trust my athletic ability to make the Indiana Jones leap?
No, it's fair. It's a man in his 40s who's not exercised during Corona time once. So there are concerns about making that that move.
Beachbody. All right, Mark, you're up in the draft.
All right, I'm going to go Minnesota at Green Bay, and I look back at that Bucks game that where Aaron Rodgers went south, the whole team did, as just an aberration. They ran up. They'll probably meet him again in the playoffs. They ran up against a great defense. Thankfully, you're up against a Vikings defense that's basically said, I don't care what, I saw Matt LaFleur saying, this is still a very intriguing Vikings defense. They're strong. Come on, that's all lip service. They traded Yannick Ngakoue. We talked about that. Danielle Hunter is basically out of commission. And so you have no, like what you went into the season envisioning, and you're thinking, if you're the Vikings, our chore is to deal with Aaron Rodgers twice a year and a bunch of other good quarterbacks. We better be able to rush the passer. They can't do that at all. I mean, the chore here is for Kirk Cousins and the Vikings offense to try to keep up with a Green Bay attack that I think should have a pretty easy day here. And I mean, you look at what Devontae Adams did last week. I mean, he is giving us the DeAndre Hopkins treatment from the old Houston days. I mean, it's just I like this. I like this situation for Green Bay a ton. I think they are maybe the second or third best team in the NFC. They're for real. The Bucs game was something different. And so keep riding Aaron Rodgers. Nothing should be slowing you down on Sunday.
We need to see the next time the Packers have a big opponent, how they match up, because if they don't there, then you're starting to ask questions about whether they are truly one of the big boys. But for now, just look at it as a blip on the radar. With the Vikings, it's like, I don't know. I like Mike Zimmer a lot, and he just got an extension. He's not going anywhere. But how do you ask that coach to keep that team invested when you bring in Yannick Ngakoue to win the Super Bowl? You trade him out of town. I don't think it's a bad trade. You're obviously 1-5, the opportunity to recoup draft capital on a veteran on an expiring contract. I get all that, but it's a tough message to send to a locker room with this much football to be played. I wouldn't be totally stunned if they go in the tank. It's not like you have a fearsome leader in Kirk Cousins that's going to hold the locker room together. This could turn into train wreck territory for the Vikings.
You're right, and yet I do think it's like it's personal accountability. It's like you're playing for your paycheck. That's what I think is motivating players and a lot of people more than anything, is you're playing for your career.
Spoken like a true tennis fan. Because this usually doesn't work in team sports.
I get it. Like, I'm just saying, if everyone takes personal accountability, I don't think their effort level has been their problem. It's the fact that they have no pass rush and their cornerbacks have been young and terrible. And by the way, they're banged up this week, so it's like a terrible matchup. But people, you need to have a group of players that take accountability. And the ones that don't, it's like you got to get rid of those players at some point. And so you do learn a little bit about that. And you're going to learn something about Kirk Cousins, because remember I said Baker is morphing into Kirk Cousins. Well, that the Kirk Cousins, body is only available because Kirk Cousins is now Jameis Winston. I don't know how it happened, but Kirk Cousins
is
exactly on pace for 33 touchdowns and 30 interceptions. The Jameis Winston stats from a year ago.
Really?
It's my favorite stat of the
That's
year.
Amazing.
Kirk Cousins tells you who he is with his first throw of the game. He throws an interception that you never saw coming, and you're like, oh, it's going to be one of those Kirk Cousins.
One of them days.
That's Jameis Winston's move. Who throws deeper on a higher percentage of throws than anyone in the NFL out of nowhere this year? That's Kirk Cousins. That's Jameis Winston's move. It's been some sort of Freaky Friday situation.
That's crazy.
It's a lot going on.
He's on pace for 30-30. I had no idea it had gotten to that point. And that was like the one thing with Cousins. Like, you love him or hate him. And it's always been like, yeah, Cousins puts up the numbers, but then in prime time or in the playoffs, you know he's going to lay down. This new version, where in addition to you having all those other concerns about what happens when the lights are on, that he's just like a total Winstonian mess. That's disturbing.
I mean, to be fair, as someone who always defends Winston, there's the good and the bad. I mean, games like this where your defense isn't going to show up, it's like he'll probably put up a lot of garbage time points. He'll put some fantasy points up. It'll be like 38-30 at the end, and you'll have a little bit of fun at least.
I do wonder if Justin Jefferson winds up being – I know because the quarterback situation, he probably doesn't have a shot, but this is an offensive rookie of the year type performance from Justin Jefferson. I mean, his numbers have been incredible every week. Take him off the offense, and what is Kirk Cousins then? I mean, that is one thing to build on. I would wonder if Kirk Cousins – I just look at the salary stuff, but I mean, is he still in their long-term plans? I mean, this feels like a team heading into a pretty ferocious rebuild, at least on one half of the ball.
I have an answer. What I think is going to happen, at least, his new extension gave him one more year of guaranteed money after this year. That was it. It was basically a one-year tack on. So you draft someone, you have Cousins there next year, and that's either it or you just evaluate how it goes. But I think next year is his
checks
last
out.
Year there.
But it's like that 1 year is at high level starter money, right? It's like
fine. He's okay.
I never understood giving him the extension, I guess is what I'm trying to say. What he gave them in the first 2 years, were they really going in the right direction with him? I guess you did it to keep the peace and all that, but I don't know, man. And Greg, you seem to your body language. My take on the Packers, no reason to worry about them until they lose against the big team again. Are you either completely confident in them right now, or do you see them as a bit of a flawed contender?
Well, I haven't been a fan of their defense, but I'm not going to kill them for that one game. I think it was a matchup game where the Bucs defense just won that, and they're just so good. When they can put up the points they do without Aaron Jones on the field or without David Bakhtiari or without Davante Adams at points of season, like, I trust them to be in it against the NFC contenders because their offense will be too good.
All right. Good stuff. Let's close up the draft and hit the primetime games. Good draft, guys.
Ooh.
Good stuff. I enjoyed it.
Fun draft.
Let's start with Sunday Night Football. Dallas at Philadelphia. Maron. I mean, we don't need to dwell on this. We were banging on about with Connie Fox on Tuesday's show how we got to stop it with these primetime games in the NFC East because it feels relentless. And then I sent a link to you guys, a story I read about, you know, television ratings and like the Arizona Seattle game from last week did a third or two thirds of the audience that some random NFC East game did the year before. And that's what it ultimately comes down to. People watch these teams. So we just have to swallow it and deal. But Benny DiNucci might be playing in primetime. That's where we're at, Mark. Benny DiNucci, who's taken a lot of snaps this week.
I think part of the reason that the ratings will still skyrocket is because it's a little bit of a Patriots factor. I mean, people, big chunks of the country love watching a Cowboys team spinning into total chaos. And it's pretty amazing where we are now with this team compared to where we were 3 or 4 weeks ago, where, I mean, how many people on their fantasy squads have Zeke Elliott and CeeDee Lamb and guys like this thinking, you know, you're going to ride these guys into your championship round? They've all gone mute. They've all been muted. And the offense has completely fallen in on itself. The defense is a total disaster. It's hard to watch.
The spinning into chaos thing has its limits, though. Like, it's a good conversation during the week, but when you actually have to sit and watch the team and they're getting beat 25-3 by the Washington football team, I don't get much joy out of that.
I don't.
No, they would have flexed this game out. If Dalton had been hurt the week before and given them time that they knew Ben DiNucci was starting this game, they would not have put Ben DiNucci in primetime. I believe that. And you never see the Cowboys get flexed out, but I think they would have just for the good of like the NFL. Because all you got to do is blitz this line into oblivion. They were the worst team in the NFL with Andy Dalton. And it's just opposing defensive coordinators are just blitz, 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 blitz against this terrible offensive line. Now you're going to do that against DiNucci with a pretty good defense. I think the last 5 minutes of that Giants-Eagles game will go down as the most important 5 minutes in the NFC East this year because the Eagles snuck that game out, and now the reserves are coming. Dallas Goedert, maybe not this week. We'll see. Jalen Reagor, Miles Sanders, Jason Peters. Like, they're coming back. The Eagles snuck out that win. Now they get, you know, DiNucci, and they're going to be a real team. They're going to say I think they can get to 8 wins, something like that. They'll be a real team, and that'll just be the NFC.
You're right. They've got Dallas. They've got their bye. They've got the Giants. Take care of business. You're 4-4-1. And some of the jokes about the NFC East will stop applying to Philadelphia. But if you look at the rest of their schedule, they're going to have to be a legitimately good team.
Right. But they're getting players back. Getting a lot of players back. That should matter.
I like watching Carson Wentz this year because it's so frenetic and all over the place. And post 54 Carson Wentz, you know, those last 6 minutes, I was on a text chain with Giants fans Thursday night last week. And I said, watch out, guys. This guy, he might get you in these last 6 minutes. And sure enough, he throws two touchdown passes, throws for 137 yards, and steals that game away. And he still has stretches where he misses open receivers or throws a bad pick. But then the last couple of weeks, you see it. You see that guy is still there, and he's making plays. And like Greg said, Goddard returns. They start getting some guys back, Jalen Reagor. This idea that the NFC East will be won by a team that's going to go with six wins or something, it wouldn't stun me if the Eagles right the ship and they're not going to go crazy, but 8-7-1. And that's like, okay,
sure,
that won the division. That's where we're at, though. This is real bad. If the Eagles somehow blow this game, if Benny Donucci goes off and they lose this game, this will be the lowest, the NFC East. We might already be there, but like the darkest moment for the NFC East. If there's an ugly like 12-10 game, Donucci wins.
I mean,
yikes.
If that happens, I would say put our podcast on pause and dial in Philadelphia Talk Radio as soon as possible.
Very true. All right, finally, Monday Night Football. Another NFC East team. The New York Giants play host to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So at least you get the national stage here for the Bucs, who are the last 3 weeks or so, maybe even you go a bit further, really since that Thursday night game, which was a little funky, the one they lost to Chicago. They've been the best team in football, and the last three quarters against the Packers were dominant, and then they just absolutely opened up a can of whip hiney in week eight against the Raiders. So there's no reason to think that Tom Brady, who will, you know, he's played enough primetime games and enough playoff games to last several lifetimes for many players. So it's not like this moment is going to be any different for him. He's just going to continue to thrive, I think. And I'm looking to see if this Patriots offense, Greg, keeps on firing on, or excuse me, Bucs offense, keeps firing on all cylinders against the Giants team, which doesn't have a terrible defense, but probably will be no match for Tampa.
Yeah, I think the Bucs offense matches up beautifully. Even without Chris Godwin, you know what the Giants defense has done pretty well without great personnel is slow teams down, make them kick field goals, make them work down the field, and, you know, see if the opposing quarterback makes a mistake. Like, that's Tom Brady eats that for breakfast. Joe Judge, the former Patriots coach, maybe he has an idea how to slow down Tom Brady after being with him all these years. I don't think it matters because he doesn't have the players. The Bucs offensive line, I'm just going to keep hammering it. It might be the best offensive line in the league. You have Tom Brady with the best offensive line in the league. He got touched one time in 49 dropbacks last week. One QB hit, almost a Golston on 49 dropbacks for Tom Brady. And there's no reason to think the Giants pass rush is going to get there. And Gronk moving better is a real thing. I think I'm putting this.
Yep.
He's in the moving better in October than September All-Star team. I might have to do this as a written segment or something. Guys who are, you know, guys improve during the season. It happens. Sometimes they don't start too well. James Conner's another one that comes to mind, and they look a lot better in October.
They really, the Bucs are shining and evolving weekly. And you think about watching football like we have for 25, 30 years, and it can't be overstated how fascinating of a case study it is for Tom Brady to go into a completely new offense at his age and what he's done. And, you know, the first couple of weeks, you kind of wondered what you were dealing with, but this feels like a legit raging juggernaut. And I'm not sure who's going to stand in the way. It's not the Giants. And of course, with the Giants, we've got Will Hernandez, who is on the COVID list right now. We'll see what else happens with that. But that's part of your offensive line trying to protect a Daniel Jones character who is not throwing the ball deep well this year. I think I just feel like the shine is off Daniel Jones. I was so excited about him and the whole offense going into this season, and it's just not materialized to the point where if you're a Giants front office executive, if any of them are even there after this season, you got to take a hard look at that situation at quarterback, depending on who else becomes available.
Give him some time. I mean, give him a little time.
I want to, but it's just,
you know, Daniel Jeremiah, just on the show, he talked about how you want to give a quarterback about 2.5 seasons, 30 starts or so. That seems fair. But you have to wonder, and it crossed my mind, having grown up in New York and knowing how the media operates there and just, you know, covering this hour league long enough, if Jones and like this entire era of Giants football is going to be remembered for the would-be breakaway touchdown run that was ruined by that turf monster. Because it wasn't like the butt fumble or anything like that. But it was a type of low light that can define a player. And if he's lucky, he has a long career and it becomes just something people remember, but it doesn't stick with him. But if this doesn't work and then they go and they sweep out the Dave Gettleman regime in totality,
right,
we'll all remember Jones's run and then how it ended so cruelly as kind of this was Giants football in this time. It was that way. And oh, not for nothing. And Giants fans who are listening, screaming at the podcast that still believe in Danny Dimes. Evan Engram catches a football on third down there.
Right. No Danny one's Dimes talking played well about in that game.
Danny Dimes falling. That's just the way sports are. It sucks. But Evan Engram has been killing them this year with drops and not being able to step up his play. And that was a season-ruining drop, potentially.
Well, Danny Dimes has played better the last 2 weeks. I thought he played very well in that game. The run, it's funny. It points out the thing that people don't notice, that Danny Dimes is one of the fastest quarterbacks in the league. He does not have the running instincts, so I'm not putting him anywhere near the top five rushers. But he's got speed. He's got good throws. I think he's played pretty well the last couple of weeks. That Thomas is killing them. I mean, you take a tackle number four overall. To me, oof, that's a bigger Gettleman indictment if that doesn't turn around than anything, especially when you got Jedrick Wills and you're in Mekhi Becton and Tristan Wirfs. They all happen to be hitting like the top tackles. There were supposed to be four great tackles. Three of them look amazing. One of them is getting Danny Dimes killed.
Yeah, and you don't have tackles that like, oh, in year four, this first round tackle evolves into a functional tackle.
Ooh, I got one for you though. DJ just brought up Garrett Bowles, who we've kind of killed for 2 years.
Well, that's true.
He's been incredible this year for the Broncos.
But I would look at, like, you look at the Joe Thomases and the Mekhi Becktons. It's like you kind of know right away that they're your functional starters. I'll tell you one reason you're not going to get a Daniel Jones 70-yard scamper that ends up in dirt. I'll tell you right now, Devin White, I thought the game he played last week was amazing. And there's a couple things he does athletically, closing speed to blow up guys in the backfield from like 18 yards away. There aren't that many players that can do that. And so this defense is just so functional and they're studious. And they kind of remind me of the offense, kind of growing each week.
And think about the butterfly effect, just circling back to Tom Brady before we close things out. Think back to about entering week 16 of last year. The Patriots with Brady were steaming towards another playoff bye and obviously the AFC East title. Over in Tampa, Jameis Winston had been up and down as he always is, but it was up enough where I remember Bruce Arians, clearly remember Arians, or there being a report out there entering week 16. I think it was ahead of a Saturday football week 16 game for the Bucs. You know, he's not going anywhere. Winston's still the guy. Then Winston totally bombs out in that Saturday game, bombs out again in week 17 with the pick six to end the season. And all of a sudden they sour on him finally. Meanwhile, with the Patriots, they lose week 17 to the Dolphins, lose the bye, then go to and lose the game to the Titans. And that sours the situation in New England and paves the way for the divorce of the Patriots and Brady. All these things had to conspire together to get Tom Brady now in Tampa with the best offensive line in football, with all these skilled players, with Bruce Arians. Butterfly effect, man. Butterfly
effect. I've got an addition for you on this one, too. The Raiders. John, you know, the Bucs did it to you again, John Gruden. If Jameis Winston hadn't played that well, Tom Brady's leaving New England no matter what. I'm 100% convinced in that.
Keep
right
telling
now.
Yourself.
He'd be a Las Vegas Raider. The Raiders would be lighting it up with Tom Brady. That's what I bet.
All right, good stuff. Good stuff. We'll be back on Sunday night to recap every game we just broke down. And yes, if you catch this during the weekend or a little later, just know that the Thursday night recap also up, where we go over Panthers and the Falcons. Okay, there we go. Got it out. This is Dan Hansen signing off for the old boss, the Quiet Storm, Daniel Jeremiah. Thank you, buddy, for stopping by. Till Sunday.